ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free.
The Herald of Truth broadcast is on the air, a program of spirit and truth dedicated to teaching the way of God more perfectly. These broadcasts contain keys to help unlock knowledge and reveal hidden truths of the Bible in these last days. Christians called to a higher level of understanding will be given Bible-based solutions to their personal as well as national problems. They will want to find out more about their part in God's plan. Our mailing address is Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, and will be given again at the end of this broadcast.
Long after the old city of Babylon had fallen, the same forces, the old Babylonian economic system, which governs us absolutely today, the old Babylonian political ideas, the old Babylonian religion, are still operating even in these days. There is a way that seems right unto a man, but the end thereof are the ways of death. So always some well-meaning fool decides that he knows more about it than God, and he's more kind. You know, when our ancestors, the people of Israel, were on the march ready to go into Palestine, God gave us our instructions very plainly. He said, of the people who are in the land I am telling you to take possession of, you shall exterminate them totally. You shall not leave one man, woman, or child alive. Because if you do, if you leave them there, you're going to have integration. Your children will grow up with theirs, they'll intermarry with them, and you will become as polluted as they are until finally I will have to exterminate you for the very same reason that I am telling you to exterminate them. And so, of course, our ancestors had to show that they weren't cruel like God. They were so kind-hearted, they wouldn't cut out the cancer. They just let it grow. And, of course, the consequences came to pass that they had been warned about. And that is the situation that we still have. And probably until the very end, we're not going to be smart enough to recognize the warnings that are in the Bible. Evil cannot exist by itself. It's not a condition. You can't show me a yard of it, or a square foot of it, or a quart of it, or a pound of it. It consists solely in the evil actions of evil people. And if they aren't around, then you don't have these evil actions. That's what we haven't been willing to learn. So the Bible has been full of these warnings to us, telling us who the evil ones are, so that we can avoid them and their works. The theme of the entire Bible is set forth in Genesis 3, verse 15. God has called Adam and Eve and Satan before him to give an accounting of their misdeeds. And he says to Satan, I will put enmity between thee and the woman, and between thy seed and her seed. Now the same Hebrew word, zerah, meaning literally seed or applied equally to descendants, is used in both cases. Satan was to have just as literal children as was Eve. So the theme of the Bible, that as long as God permits this dispensation to run, there would be this constant warfare between the children of Satan and the children of Eve, is stated there, and the rest of the Bible is just a detailed development of that theme. You will find in John 8, verses 31 to 44, that Jesus Christ identified these living children of Satan in his own day, when he said to them, ye are the children of your father, the devil. He wasn't just being vulgarly abusive. He was telling them a plain biological fact, exactly the same as if you said to a Chinaman, your ancestors were Mongolians. And he told them with the strictest scientific truth that their ancestor was Satan. And he was right. He was always right. Whether you recognize Satan as an actual person, which the Bible does, or whether you try to explain him away as just a mere allegorical personification of evil tendencies, you still can't get away from the fact that evil comes from those who are his followers, and primarily those who are his literal children, his descendants. All history teaches that same lesson. One of the most important of the ancient cities was the city of Tyre. The Bible shows that Tyre came into this satanic system. Now, it speaks of one of the kings of Tyre, speaks of him in terms which show unmistakably that he was literally an incarnation of Satan himself, because this language would not be applicable to anyone else. Here's what Ezekiel was told. Son of man, take up a lamentation upon the king of Tyre, and say unto him, Thus saith the Lord God, Thou sealest up the sun, full of wisdom, and perfect in beauty. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was thy covering, the sardius, the topaz, and the diamond, and the beryl, the onyx, and the jasper, the sapphire, the emerald, and the carbuncle, and gold. The workmanship of thy tablets and of thy pipes was prepared in thee in the day that thou wast created. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth, and I have set thee so. Thou wast upon the holy mountain of God. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created until iniquity was found in thee. Thine heart was lifted up because of thy beauty. Thou hast corrupted thy wisdom by reason of thy brightness. I will cast thee to the ground. I will lay thee before kings that they may behold thee. Now you couldn't apply that language to any mere man. It doesn't fit. He can't live up to it. So it shows that the satanic direction there was really carried on in person one time. Now, under this satanic direction, Tyre became one of the great merchant cities of the ancient world, probably the greatest. I read to you before from Ezekiel 28, verses 12 to 17. In Ezekiel 27, verse 13, take up over Tyre a dirge, and thou shalt say unto Tyre, O thou that dwellest by the entrance of the sea, thou merchant of the peoples unto many shores. It is worth noting, incidentally, that in the Hebrew, the very same word, Kenon, meant a Canaanite and a merchant. They were interchangeable, as today they are. Go down to the business district of Los Angeles, for example, and go in store after store and see if you don't find them all of the same race and all with the same shaped nose. You don't have to go far into archaeology to find the proof of who these Canaanites were. The Israelites were not Jews. No Israelite was ever a Jew, and no Jew was ever an Israelite. The confusion has come from using the term interchangeably, sometimes meaning a person of a particular race, no matter what his religion. For example, Ben-Gurion, who was the principal founder of this Jewish nation in Palestine today, is a Jew by race. He's a Buddhist by religion. And sometimes they use it to speak of people of the religion of Judaism, no matter what their race. There are, for example, today, pure-blooded, black-skinned, kinky-haired Negroes who have adopted the religion of Judaism. And there are yellow-skinned, slant-eyed, pure-blooded Mongolian Chinese who have adopted the religion of Judaism. And the average person doesn't know which he's talking about when he uses the term Jew. But to the extent that it is used in a racial significance, all the ancient monuments, without exception, show this. The people that we call Canaanites, the people that we call Assyrians, and a large part of the people that we call Babylonians, were, as shown by their own monuments, typical hook-nosed Jews. Whereas, no ancient monument that shows any Israelite showed anything but a typical straight-nosed Anglo-Saxon type of thing. So, trade was in those days practically a Jewish monopoly, as it is today. And in those days it became evil, as it is today. Greed, running uncontrolled, always runs to that sort of extreme. Again, going back to the 28th chapter of Ezekiel, "With thy wisdom and with thine understanding, thou hast gotten thee riches, and hast gotten gold and silver into thy treasures. By thy great wisdom and by thy traffic hast thou increased thy riches, and thine heart is lifted up because of thy riches. By the multitude of thy merchandise have they filled the midst of thee with violence, and thou hast sinned. Thou hast defiled thy sanctuaries by the multitude of thy iniquities, by the iniquity of thy traffic. Therefore will I bring a fire from the midst of thee. It shall devour thee, and I will bring thee to ashes upon the earth in the sight of all them that behold thee." Take our great commercial cities, New York, Chicago, Los Angeles, the outstanding great commercial cities. They had been taken over completely by the Jews, and they're the outstanding centers of criminal violence, too, aren't they? You see, if these things merely happened occasionally for no particular reason, the Bible would never bother to record them. It records only those things which are matters of unchangeable principle. Some of them good principle, some of them evil principle. But the things that we can rely upon to be operative according to their nature, and therefore either for our good or for our harm, as the case may be. But these people who monopolized trade in those days were these Canaanites, these hook-nosed Jews. For example, Hosea 12, verse 7. As you read it in your King James Version, it says, "He is a merchant. The balances of deceit are in his hands. He loves to oppress." It says he is a Canaan, sure, merchant or Canaanite, the terms are interchangeable. "The balances of deceit are in his hands." Is there any people that for centuries it has been proverbial you have to distrust in all your commercial dealings with them, lest they take advantage of you? Here it talks about the balances of deceit. Now in those days, coinage was just coming into being, and it was an uncertain thing. There was a certain amount of gold coinage, but lest somebody file off some of the gold so that the coin wasn't worth what it should be, the money was weighed out, the same as the goods were weighed out. So the deceitful merchant, he had one set of weights to use on his balance scale when he was buying. He had a different set of weights to use when he was selling. When he bought from you, his balance scale or his bushel measure was large. You had to give him more than standard measure. When he sold to you, his measure was small and you didn't get your full measure. When you paid for something for him, the scales on which he weighed the money you presented had false weights, so you had to present more gold or silver to buy it than true weights would have called for. And this was characteristic all through there. Again, go to Zephaniah 1, verse 11. "Howl, ye inhabitants of Naktesh," that's the bazaar district, the commercial district of Jerusalem. "Howl, ye inhabitants of Naktesh, for all the merchant people, the Canaan, are cut down. All they that are laden with silver are cut off." This race was everywhere throughout Western Asia. Some of you will remember that back when I showed you some of my slides, I showed you pictures of a little ancient pre-Babylonian Sumerian statue of one of their own people. A typical hook-nosed Jew, even rubbing his hands this way to mine own mother, I couldn't sell it any cheaper. I showed you pictures of the beautiful glazed and painted tile from the lining of an Assyrian palace, where their best artists showed their own people, the Assyrians, as typical hook-nosed Jews. I showed you pictures of sculptures from the walls of a Hittite palace, where they showed their own people, as typical hook-nosed Jews. Now, it was into this land, among these people, that our ancestors were sent to live. And they were warned, if you allow these people among you, they are going to corrupt you. We couldn't be cruel like this Old Testament God that our ministers like to denounce today and say, I can't believe in that Old Testament God. You know, they seem to think that it would matter to him whether they believed in him or not. But let me tell you, every time you decide you're better than God, you're wrong. When he gave instructions to cut out the cancer before it became fatal, he knew what he was doing. The Bible tells us of these things. God tells us of the troubles we're going to have because we allow these people among us. And he finally tells us that when we ourselves have botched this thing up to the point where he has to come back and take over personally to keep us from being destroyed and exterminated by these forces we have allowed to grow up and take control, that it is going to be changed back to what he told us to make it. In Zechariah 14, verse 21, and in that day, speaking of the day when God comes back to restore these things, in that day there shall be no more the Canaanite in the house of the Lord of hosts. And heaven speed the day. These same commercial evils became dominant in Assyria, too. Now, Assyria is spoken of mostly because of her great military exploits, because she was constantly conquering and pillaging her various neighbors. But that was not all of it. She had the same typical crookedness that has been consistently characteristic of those people. In Nahum 3, verse 16, speaking of Assyria, thou hast multiplied thy merchants above the stars of heaven. And he lists that as being among the evils for which the city of Nineveh, the capital city of Assyria, was going to be destroyed. In Bible times, these people had become the completely dominant race in the city of Tyre, become the most powerful men of the nation. Isaiah 23, verse 8. Who has taken this counsel against Tyre, the crowning city, whose merchants are princes, whose traffickers are the honorable of the earth? If you think that was ancient, note the fact that a large part of the British nobility today, the peerage, the titles of nobility, are Jew merchants who became wealthy and bought and paid for their titles of nobility. The honor of the British crown has been sold and peddled like in any house of ill fame, and that's the origin of a great many of the titles in your British House of Lords. Over here, when we want to appoint an ambassador to some foreign nation, who is he? Don't you note that usually he is a Jew who has contributed liberally to the campaign funds of the party which is in power? The more it changes, the more it is the same. God wouldn't have bothered telling us about this thing to warn us if this was something that was going to happen only between 868 and 742 B.C. and not thereafter. It wouldn't have meant anything. He warns us of these things because they are reaching a degree of intensity in our own day, which means the literal destruction of civilization if they're not checked. Now you find, of course, in your Bible many places where God condemns the city of Babylon for the evils which were so characteristic of the Babylonian civilization. But it's very interesting to note that when the Bible prophesies the fall of the city of Tyre, it does it in the very same words that it uses in prophesying the fall of Babylon, including the final fall of Great Babylon, the Babylonian system, in our own day. For example, note this, speaking of the city of Tyre. This is Ezekiel 26, verse 13. And I will cause the noise of thy songs to cease, and the sound of thy harps shall be heard no more. Now speaking of great Babylon, and this is Revelation 18, verse 22. And the voice of harpers and musicians and of pipers and trumpeters shall be heard no more at all in me. Now going back to Tyre, Ezekiel 26, verse 21. I will make thee a terror, and thou shalt be no more. Thou shalt be sought for, yet shalt thou never be found again, saith the Lord God. Now, great Babylon, the destruction of it in our own day, Revelation 18, verse 21. And a mighty angel took up a stone like a great millstone and cast it into the sea, saying, thus, with violence, shall that great city Babylon be thrown down and shall be found no more at all. Now the city of Tyre, again, note this parallel all the way. It is talking about the same thing. In other words, just as you had in the Babylonian Empire, the capital city Babylon, which was the head of all these evils, but you had a number of other surrounding cities which were equally bad, and the same things could be said of them, so you had identically the same people manifesting the same evils in Tyre on the Palestinian coast of the Mediterranean Sea, and which had to meet the same judgment. Ezekiel 27, verses 29 to 33. And all that handle the oar, the mariners, and all the pilots of the sea, shall come down from their ships. They shall stand upon the land, and shall cry bitterly, and shall cast up dust upon their heads. They shall wallow themselves in the ashes, and in their wailing they shall take up a lamentation for thee, and shall lament over thee, saying, what city is like Tyre, the destroyed in the midst of the sea? When thy wares went forth out of thee, and thou didst fill many people, thou didst enrich the kings of the earth with the multitude of thy riches and of thy merchandise. In the time when thou shalt be broken by the seas and the depths of the waters, thy merchandise and all thy company in the midst of thee shall fall. Now note the same language referring to great Babylon in the book of Revelation. And remember, Babylon was not a seaport. It was some few hundred miles inland. And every shipmaster and all the company in ships and sailors and as many as trade by sea stood afar off and cried when they saw the smoke of her burning, saying, what city is like unto this great city? And they cast dust on their heads and cried, weeping and wailing, saying, alas, that great city, wherein were made rich all that had ships in the sea by reason of her costliness, for in one hour is she made desolate. That's Revelation 18, verses 17 to 19. Now, again, if these people were the same throughout, we should expect to find something similar in God's condemnation of another of their capital cities, their land of Edom. The Bible tells you, you know, that certain of the angels left their original condition and intermarried with the daughters of men and produced a race which therefore had the satanic bloodline. They were literally the children of these rebel angels, including Satan. And among the places where the Bible tells you their descendants settled was Mount Seir. Now, the Bible, you remember, was always so insistent that the people God had selected to be his people should not mongrelize, should not intermix with the other races. And you remember that Esau violated that command. He married two Canaanite women and later an Ishmaelite woman. Now, he couldn't stay there then. His descendants, mongrelized, had no right to inherit. So he moved out of the land of Canaan where his brother Jacob was to stay, Esau moved out into Mount Seir, which is called the land of Edom. From then on, there was no one for his descendants to marry, except these Edomite people who were the descendants of this satanic line of people living there. Suppose, for example, that a white man from the city of Ontario married two negresses and then moved to the interior of the Congo, and for the next 1,800 years, his descendants lived there, and there was no one that his descendants could marry except these Congolese Negroes. Now, after the end of 1,800 years, one of his descendants would say, "Once I had a white ancestor." That's very true. But the last trace of white blood would have vanished from them. They would be, in every respect, plain Negroes. Now, you remember in the 8th chapter of the Gospel of John, where Jesus Christ is speaking to the Jews, and it says Jews, there's no mistake about it. And by the way, if any of you think he was merely being vulgarly abusive because they disagreed with him in argument, why, don't. He never was. He denounced them as hypocrites at times because that's what they were. And he told them with biological accuracy that they were the descendants of Satan, which they were. But he never said anything about them that they were not. It mentions now that these were Jews who believed in him. So he says to them, "If you can continue in my doctrine, then will you be my disciples indeed, and you shall know the truth, and the truth will set you free." And as I say, you can just hear the ring of sarcasm in his voice, because he knew them. And with that one statement, he's lost them. They bristle up. "What do you mean, set us free? We're Abraham's seed, and we've never been in bondage to anything." Now, they identified themselves there out of their own mouths. If they belonged to any of the 12 tribes at all, they had been in bondage the first time in Egypt, hadn't they? And if they belonged to the 10-tribe northerly nation of Israel, they had been in bondage the second time in Assyria. And if they belonged to the 2-tribe southerly nation of Judah, they had been in bondage a second time in Babylon. And they say, "We've never been in bondage to any man." And he says, "That's right. You're in bondage to sin, however." Now, the only people who could say, "Abraham was an ancestor of ours, and we never were in bondage to anyone," were these Edomite Jews. There's where the satanic bloodline had crept into them, because from the days of Abraham, well, it got right down through Isaac, then to Esau. And there you started the pollution with mongrelization, picking up satanic bloodline. So he winds up that same passage in the 8th chapter of John by identifying them, telling them who their ancestor was, Satan. Now, they became quite a military power as they grew numerous down there in Edom. You read in the Bible, in the historical books, Chronicles and Kings, of considerable warfare at times between the Edomites harassing the southerly borders of Judah and the Israelite tribe. Saul was told to go down there and exterminate them, and he didn't. He killed a few of them, he stole their sheep and cattle and came back. And for that, God told the prophet Samuel to tell him, "I have deposed you as king, and I'm going to make a better man than yourself the king of this nation, Israel." When the southerly kingdom of Judah was taken into captivity for 70 years by Babylon, deported to Babylon, you remember that nearly all the people were taken. All the real tribes of Judah and Benjamin were deported. Those Canaanites who had been left in the land when the Israelites conquered it and failed to exterminate them, they were left behind, and they were but a very few. So during that 70 years that the land was left partly vacant, The Edomites were displaced from their position in Mount Seir by a great invasion of an Arabian people, the Nabateans, and they were finally driven out westwardly. Now, they couldn't go southwest much because they would be getting into the borders of Egypt, and Egypt was much too big and powerful for them to tackle at that time. So they kept north of the borders of Egypt, and they took over the southerly half, approximately, of what had been the old kingdom of Judah, the two-tribe nation of Judah. When this little handful of people came back after the Babylonian captivity, 42,600 people, of whom slightly over 8,000 were not of any of the tribes of Israel at all, as the books of Ezra and Nehemiah show you, 34,000 people who could trace their ancestry to Judah, Benjamin, or Levi, that's all. They were not big enough to displace these Edomite invaders, so all they could do was move to the north. Now, originally, the tribe of Judah was to the south, the tribe of Benjamin to the north, and the capital city of Jerusalem lay right on the borderline between them. Then north of Benjamin was the old ten-tribe kingdom of Israel. Now, you remember the Bible records that when the kingdom of Israel was taken into captivity by Assyria, the Assyrians brought other people from near Assyria and settled them in Samaria. Now, if you take the territory occupied by the original 12 tribes, the southerly third made up the two-tribe kingdom of Judah. The middle third was the southerly half of the northern kingdom of Israel, and this middle half was Samaria. And the northerly third of this total territory was Galilee. The Bible says the Assyrians brought other people and settled them in Samaria and left Galilee vacant. So when the people returning from Babylon tried to sort themselves out, the people of Judah took the southerly part now, and all they had left, really, was a portion of the old territory of Judah plus all the territory of Benjamin, and pushed Benjamin north. And Benjamin couldn't just move over a little because that was Samaria and fully occupied by other people. So they had to leapfrog over clear into the vacant territory of Galilee where the Benjamites settled. And you will remember that nearly all the followers of Christ came from Galilee. Of all his 12 disciples, 11 of them were Galileans. Only one, Judas Iscariot, was a Jew. There is no such word in any language known to man as Iscariot. It is a garbling in trying to transliterate it into Greek of the Hebrew word Iscariot, man of Kerioth, and Kerioth is a little village in the southwesterly portion of the old territory of the kingdom of Judah, well within the area taken over by these Edomite Jews. Then these Edomite Jews under Herod conquered and took over the remainder of the territory of the kingdom of Judah, and Herod was confirmed by the Romans in 37 BC as king of Judea. So he brought in with him his army, he brought in with him all his hangers-on. He took over complete the civil government. He took over the temple. The Levites and the Aaronic priesthood were displaced. He murdered the last high priest, the man rightfully entitled to it, as a descendant of Aaron. He put into the high priesthood a succession of worthless scoundrels of his own followers. You see, the high priesthood was hereditary and for life. And you remember your Bible speaking of one of these high priests sarcastically comments he was high priest that year. In fact, one of them served something like 4.5 months, I believe, before he was removed from office and replaced by a lower type scoundrel than himself. Now, here were these Edomite Jews, who were the same hook-nosed Canaanite people with the satanic bloodline which Christ identified in the 8th chapter of the Gospel of John. Now, if this is, as I say, the same thread running through all of these things, Babylon is one manifestation of it, Assyria is another manifestation of it, Tyre is another manifestation of it, and we should find something said about Edom, shouldn't we? We do. Let's note the parallel now between God's statement of his judgment on Edom and his judgment on Babylon. In the 49th chapter of Jeremiah, he's telling you about his judgment on Edom. In the 50th chapter, he's telling you of his judgment on Babylon. So, Jeremiah 49, verses 18 and 19. As in the overthrow of Sodom and Gomorrah, and the neighboring cities thereof, saith the Lord, no man shall abide there, neither shall a son of man dwell in it. Behold, he shall come up like a lion from the swelling of Jordan against the habitation of the strong, but I will suddenly make him run away from her. And who is a chosen man that I may appoint over her? For who is like me? And who will appoint me the time? And who is that shepherd that will stand before me? Now there he's speaking of Edom. Now go on to the next chapter where he's speaking of Babylon. As God overthrew Sodom and Gomorrah and the neighbor cities thereof, saith the Lord, so shall no man abide there, neither shall any son of man dwell there. Behold, a people shall come from the north, and a great nation, and many kings shall be raised up from the coasts of the earth. The king of Babylon has heard the report of them, and his hands waxed feeble. Anguish took hold of him, and pangs as of a woman in travail. Behold, he shall come up like a lion from the swelling of Jordan under the habitation of the strong, and I will make them suddenly run away from her. And who is a chosen man that I may appoint over her? And who is like me? And who will appoint me the time? And who is that shepherd that will stand before me? Now go back to Edom again, this judgment. Therefore, hear of the counsel of the Lord that he hath against Edom, and his purposes that he has purposed against the inhabitants of Teman. Surely the least of the flock shall draw them out. Surely he will make their habitations desolate with them. The earth is moved at the noise of their fall. At the cry, the noise thereof was heard in the Red Sea. Going to chapter 50, speaking of Babylon, beginning verse 45, therefore, hear ye the counsel of the Lord that he hath taken against Babylon, and his purposes that he hath purposed against the land of the Chaldeans. Surely the least of the flock shall draw them out. Surely he shall make their habitation desolate with them. At the noise of the taking of Babylon, the earth is moved, and the cry is heard among the nations. So this is talking now about the same thing in every instance. The final destruction of this evil system, which through the same people manifested itself in the same way over all of Western Asia in the ancient world, and which manifests itself in the same way over all of Western civilization in our own day, and which can only be destroyed by the power of God because we have abdicated the power that God gave us. We have put this thing in positions of power over us. This final destruction of the Babylonian system, which God prophesied in the book of Revelation, in other words, it is talking about the same thing all the way through. Notice again, the principal blame is placed upon these Canaanite Jew merchants for the evils of Babylon. Here in the book of Revelation, the 18th chapter, and after these things I saw another angel come down from heaven, having great power, and the earth was lightened with his glory. And he cried mightily with a strong voice, saying, Babylon the great is fallen. Note that repetition. Not just the one fall of the ancient city. Sure, that's been nothing but a heap of mud out there in the desert for 2,000 years. But a second fall also. Babylon the Great is fallen, and has become the habitation of devils, and the hold of every foul spirit, and a cage of every unclean and hateful bird. For all nations have drunk of the wine of the wrath of her fornication, and the kings of the earth have committed fornication with her, and the merchants of the earth are waxed rich through the abundance of her delicacies. Now God never condemned any man for becoming well-to-do out of any kind of honest effort. Wealth gained honestly is never condemned anywhere in the Bible. And when he is condemning these rich merchants, it is because of the way they got their wealth. The way that through all these centuries has been so characteristic of them that you won't find a race or a nation anywhere in the Western world that doesn't have the same axioms and sayings about anybody who is fool enough to deal with a Jew. As they say, you deal with a Jew, you're just paying your fool's tax. And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God has remembered her iniquities. Reward her, even as she rewarded you, and double unto her double, according to her works. In the cup which she has filled, fill to her double. Remember your Israel law as given by God. What was the penalty for theft? Not a $25 fine suspended. The penalty was you gave back a minimum of at least twice the value of what you stole. If you stole $100, you had to give back $200. And that took all the fun out of it. It wasn't profitable anymore. So here is the law of God. For the way the Babylonian system and its people have become wealthy by cheating you, give to them double punishment. Now it goes on, speaking of this last fall of Great Babylon. And the merchants, note this now, the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over her, for no man buys their merchandise anymore. Now let's see if we can identify these merchants. The merchandise of gold and silver and precious stones and of pearls. Who are your jewelers today? And fine linen and purple and silk and scarlet. What about the clothing manufacturers? Yeah, once in a while you find a little retail store where you can go buy a shirt or something of that sort that's not run by them. But who are the manufacturers from whom he has to buy his stock in trade? Hart, Schaffner, and Marx. And all aromatic wood, and all manner vessels of ivory, and all manner vessels of most precious wood, and of brass, and iron, and marble. And your big department stores? All right, who owns them? You know it, don't you, just as well as I do. And cinnamon, and odors, and ointments, and frankincense. And the druggists? Find me just one big drug manufacturing firm today that is not Jewish-owned and Jewish-controlled. Your big drug chains, all of them, like Thrifty Drug and that. No, I'll take that back. There is one other, Savon Drug. That's a Mormon institution controlled by the Zion Mercantile Company. And that's the only big drug chain that I've ever heard of that's operated by white men. And wine and oil and fine flour and wheat and beasts and sheep. All right. What about the wholesale food stores? Yes, you can find a little corner grocery store someplace that's run by white people. But find who it is that are the big wholesale stores that he has to buy from. Yeah, and they've got their stranglehold on that. And that's why the prices go up so badly. And slaves and souls of men. So these are these merchants. The merchants of these things, which were made rich by her, stand afar off for the fear of her torment, weeping and wailing. Now, you notice early in this thing, he says, the merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn over it, for no man buys their merchandise anymore. You know, we're beginning to get pretty close to that, because they are not leaving us anything to buy with. Now, you talk to any economist today who has kept up with what's going on, and he will tell you that we are being set up just exactly as we were in 1929 for just the same kind of a crash we had in 1929, only on a much bigger scale. Now, first, they stole all of our gold. If you're a white man, you can't have any. If you're a Jew banker, you can have it in unlimited quantities, and especially, you can get it from the U.S. Treasury if you're going to send it abroad, over to Palestine, or over to one of these Swiss banks where it can't be traced any further. Now they've taken our silver from us. These plugs that Uncle is minting now, with a copper center and a tiny little layer of copper nickel alloy on the faces of it to make it look like a quarter. Actually, it's worth less intrinsically for the metal in it than a 5-cent piece, which at least is this copper nickel alloy all the way through. So what we've got are things that are plugs of substantially no intrinsic value. Our paper money, they have made of no intrinsic value. What kind of paper money can you get today? Look at it, any denomination you've got. It's a Federal Reserve Bank note. Now, when you go to the bank and borrow money, you sign a promissory note promising to pay to them on a certain date so much money. And the Federal Reserve note is an IOU from a purely private banking institution, in spite of the false use of that federal name. Yeah, you can buy federal tires, but the U.S. government has no part in the manufacture of them. And the Federal Reserve Bank is a private banking institution. So the only money left now is their IOU. You can't get anything for it except another IOU from the Federal Reserve Bank. What are you going to do with it? What's it worth? What's going to happen? They think they've really got you then. You're dead broke. They've got a mortgage on just about everything you own. How many of you own your home free and clear without a mortgage or trustee on it? Everything you think you own, and they can take it away from you. You know, they did a pretty good job of that back in 1929. But you know, evil has a way of outsmarting itself. When they laugh in your face and say, all right, what's that paper good for? Are you going to go buy something from the May Company? What are you going to pay for it with? The merchants of the earth shall weep and mourn, for no man buys their merchandise anymore. They got so clever in taking all your money away from you that now you haven't got anything to buy with. And when it reaches that point, the American people are not going to sit down and quietly watch their wives and children starve to death. They aren't going to buy the merchandise, but they're going to have whatever it takes. And there is where this people who through the centuries have profited by their crookedness and their scheming are going to find they have outsmarted them. They have made their trick so clever that it's backfired on them. Remember, all of those ancient empires were governed by this same satanic people with their same satanic principles. And they're still here doing business at the old stand in the same way. Let's go right on down in this same 18th chapter of Revelation. And a mighty angel took up a stone, like a great millstone, and cast it into the sea, saying, thus, with violence. Remember what I said? The American people are not going to starve when they spring the trap on us. Thus, with violence, shall that great city Babylon be thrown down, and shall be found no more at all. Now, this is not talking about the fall of the ancient city Babylon on the Euphrates River, because all that had happened many centuries before John was told to write these things down. This was talking about the far distant future, talking about our own day. And it's still talking about that great city Babylon, the Babylonian system. And it goes on to give the reasons. For thy merchants were the great men of the earth, for by thy sorceries were all nations deceived. And in her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. And all the innocent blood shed in the earth, the prophets of the Old Testament who were murdered by the Catholic Church, of course not. They'd been dead many, many centuries before there was a Catholic Church. And of all that were slain upon the earth. The Catholic Church has been corrupted by these same people and used a part of their same scheme. Exactly as in our own day, they have corrupted the Methodist Church and the Episcopal Church and some of the other Protestant churches in the same manner. Now let's see if we can trace this same thing. In her was found the blood of prophets and of saints and of all that were slain upon the earth. Let's take the words of Jesus Christ himself out of the 23rd chapter of Matthew, verses 29 to 36. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites. Who was he talking to? He was talking to Jews, wasn't he? Because ye build the tombs of the prophets and garnish the sepulchres of the righteous, and say, if we had been in the days of our fathers, we would not have been partakers with them in the blood of the prophets. Therefore ye be witnesses against yourselves that ye are the children of them which killed the prophets. Who? Jews. Fill ye up then the measure of your fathers. Ye serpents, ye generation of vipers, it reads. And that is entirely a mistranslation. In the original Greek from which this was translated, it is not talking about a particular generation of people. The Greek word is genema, which means progeny, children, descendants. Ye serpents, ye children of vipers, how can ye escape the damnation of hell? Wherefore, behold, I send unto you prophets and wise men and scribes. Some of them ye shall kill and crucify. And some of them ye shall scourge in your synagogues. Any question about the identification there? And persecute from city to city, that upon you, the same race that he's talking to now, the same genema, children of vipers, that upon you may come all the righteous blood shed upon the earth, from the blood of righteous Abel, unto the blood of Zacharias, who ye slew between the temple and the altar. Verily, I say unto you, all these things shall come upon this generation. And again, you've got mistranslation, because here the word is genia, derived from genos, which is the foundation of this word the Jews have liked to coin genocide. It means a race or nation. All these things shall come upon this race or nation. So this can only be the Jews who are referred to also in Revelation 18, verse 24. The people who have had this commercial, financial power all through all these centuries are the same ones the Bible is talking about from beginning to end. And the Bible never says anything good about them. So the fall of this evil, satanic conspiracy must come with violence, as it says in Revelation 18, verse 21. By whom are they brought down? With violence. The Bible raises no questions that it doesn't answer. And the correct answer to it will always be found only in the Bible. Ezekiel 25, verses 13 and 14. Therefore, thus saith the Lord God, I will also stretch out mine hand upon Edom, and I will cut off man and beast from it, and I will make it desolate from Teman, and they of Dedan shall fall by the sword, and I will lay my vengeance upon Edom by the hand of my people Israel. And they shall do in Edom according to mine anger and according to my fury. Now that has never happened in all past history. That is something which is yet to come. And we know, of course, and have proved many times over, that the so-called Anglo-Saxon, Germanic, and Scandinavian peoples of today are the actual, literal, traceable blood descendants of the Israel of the Bible. And God said, by my people Israel, I will lay my vengeance upon Edom. And in the book of Revelation, Jesus Christ told John, this evil Babylonian system will be overthrown with violence. Turn to the 149th Psalm, verses 5 to 9. Let the saints be joyful in glory. Let them sing aloud upon their beds. Now, who are the saints? You find in the 148th Psalm, Psalm 148, verse 14, the statement of who all of God's saints are. Not some of them, not part of them, but all of them. He also exalts the horn of his people. The praise of all his saints, even of the children of Israel, a people near unto him. Praise ye the Lord. The 149th Psalm now, the next one after that, says, let the saints be joyful in glory. Let them sing aloud upon their beds. Let the high praise of God be in their mouth, and a two-edged sword in their hand, to execute vengeance upon the heathen and punishments upon the people, to bind their kings with chains and their nobles with fetters of iron, to execute upon them the judgment written. This honor hath all his saints. It tells how the judgment is coming and who's going to do it. And if you are going to have the honor to be the servants of God in carrying out some of this judgment, you shouldn't go around sniffling and say, isn't it awful? You should thank God that he would honor you with that privilege.
You have been listening to a message by the late Pastor Bertrand L. Compre from his sermon titled, Merchants of Babylon. If you would like a complete CD of this talk, ask for it by name and send a donation to cover our costs and help with radio time. This sermon, Merchants of Babylon, is also available in booklet form for an additional donation of $2. Thank you.
We pray that your spiritual ears have received today's message and that you are fed with strong meat relevant to solving the needs of our nation and Christian civilization everywhere. Herald of Truth is sponsored by Kingdom Identity Ministries through the financial support and prayers of listeners like you who love the truth of God's Word and want to see it broadcast throughout the land to awaken His people. If you would like a
CD
of today's message, tell us the date and station to which you are listening and send a donation to cover our cost plus help with radio time to Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602. We would appreciate donations made by our international listeners to be in U.S. funds. For a free introductory packet of information, including our doctrinal statement of beliefs, plus lists of books and tapes to aid you in your study of biblical truth, write Kingdom Identity Ministries, Post Office Box 1021, Harrison, Arkansas, 72602, USA. Or request this material by calling 870-741-1119. That's 870-741-1119. Visit our internet website by going to www.kingidentity.com. Type www.kingidentity.com. We invite you to listen regularly to Herald of Truth broadcast for more dynamic messages proclaiming the gospel of the kingdom at this same time and station.